Good morning and welcome to The Conversation on KMUN. My name's Graham. I will be your host today. Thrilled to be in the chair and having a conversation with you in the community. Today's show is about narratives. It's about stories. It's about language. My concept for the show is you create the narrative, or the narrative creates you. I think humans are inherently creative people. Humans are inherently creative humans. And that when we're passive, we lose part of that creativity, and it's a vital part of life, is being creative and hearing stories of creativity. So today's topic is you create the narrative, or the narrative creates you. But first, I'm going to try something new on the show. I'd like to see all three phone lines light up before I even take the first caller to the air. And the way that I'm going to attempt to do that is with an icebreaker question. These are intended to just be fun and a little bit goofy, not serious. And it's just a way for us to kind of oil the gears of the show. So today's icebreaker question, by the way, the number is 503-325-0010. I hope you're one of the first three folks to call with the answer to this icebreaker question. The icebreaker question for today is, name one of your favorite fictional characters and why. And so I didn't say name your favorite fictional character because I know how hard it is to commit. And so this can just be one of your favorite characters. And I'm preferring a fictional character because we're talking about creativity and narratives and storytelling today. So what do you think? 503-325-0010. This can be from a comic strip, a graphic novel, a cartoon. This could be from a book, from a movie, from a Netflix series, from a bedtime story that you heard on KMUN. Okay, two phone lines lit up. I guess that's enough to get started. I was hoping to have all three lines full before we started. But let's go to our first caller. Phone patch number one, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Was that me?
That's you. Sounds like Jim.
It is, of course.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Graham. Let me turn my radio down so we don't get the feedback here.
Sounds good.
Okay, I have been reading British writers, mostly British women writers, crime fiction. P.D. James is probably well known to many of our listeners, and her main detective character is a gentleman named Adam Dalgleish. I've never seen that last name before, but the British crime novels are interesting in that you get to deduce the crime. The crime's already been committed, unlike a Lee Child's book, perhaps, with that heavy-duty character of hers. We are watching the bad guy rip the head off the victim and this and that and the other thing. These victims have already been dead for the most part, and the books or the stories unwind about the actual detection of how they come to the conclusion, who did what to whom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to read, and the violence is more implied than graphic, which is okay with me. But that is my contribution.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. Hopefully you have primed one of the people listening to pick up one of those books.
Okay. You know, there's a Our library here in Cathlamet has 17 P.D. James novels, and I'm going through them one after the other. I'm on number 11 now, so I'm working my way through her entire catalog.
All right. Shout out to the local libraries. Thanks, Jim.
All right, Graham. Thanks a lot, man, for taking these calls.
Absolutely.
Bye now.
Bye. Moving over to phone patch number two. You were the second caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
My name's Dave.
Hi, Dave.
And for decades, have loved a character in a novel called The Ronin by William Dale Jennings. It's a novel based on a Zen myth. A Ronin is an out-of-work samurai in that era of Japanese history. And the story is about the transformation of the ultimate bad guy into the ultimate good guy.
Cool.
That's about all I can give you as a teaser to read the book. It's a short book. The Ronin's character is explored in all kinds of ways that they're really relevant to how we go through our lives. So a great character to emulate.
Cool.
Turn your bad side into your good side.
Yeah. Thanks for helping us break the ice, Dave.
Okay.
Take care. All right, so I tried to patch our third caller over. Are you there? Let me try this one more time. Hello, are you there? Let me try to patch you over. Hang on. Okay, so failed. Sorry about that. Lori, call me back, okay? We'll figure this thing out. This is my first time doing this. Let's see. We should have a caller on phone patch, too. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been reading books by Louise Penny, and Inspector Gamache is one of my favorite characters. He's a very stately, intelligent man, and he has a lot of charisma, and he listens to things more than bossing everybody around to find out the clues. And it's in a setting in Quebec in a little town called Three Pines. There's quite a few books with Inspector Gamache.
Inspector Gamache, there you have it. Thanks for your call.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's see. Lori, we've got you back.
Okay. Hey, to be completely predictable as a communicable disease investigator, I love Sherlock Holmes.
Very cool. Is there is it the books, or are there any of the series, remakes, movies that you like?
I mean, I had to love the, what was it, in the Cumberbatch remake on BBC. It was really well done.
Yeah, I thought casting Frodo Baggins as Watson was brilliant.
Yeah, oh, totally.
I'm just kidding.
I love Martin Freeman, and I think my husband is related to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, let's see, what about the Robert Downey Jr. version? Yeah, well, a different vibe to the Benedict Cumberbatch version.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Any particular stories from the canon that you like the best?
Oh, you know, they're all so good, and it's all that intuitive, whodunit.
Yeah.
And how he figured it out. I mean, they're all good. I just re-listened to A Scandal in Bohemia yesterday on Audible, and it was good.
Yeah, it seems like the technique and the style is what you're there for. Did you ever read the Encyclopedia Brown books that were for kids?
No.
It's kind of like a children's version of Sherlock Holmes. He was this young boy named Encyclopedia Brown, and he solved all these crimes in his neighborhood.
I think I've heard of this.
There's clues and things. I liked him as a kid.
He came
out
when I was older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think, I can't remember when they came out, but I had access to them when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call, Lori.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye, Graham.
Bye. Well, I think the ice is officially broken. We've heard about some of our favorite fictional characters. And so we're going to move on to talking more about narrative. It's hard to talk about language without thinking about the current social justice issues. So I found this website called opportunityagenda.org, and they have a page called Guidelines for Conscientious Communications. And so that is the source that I'm pulling from today. And they have this deal called Five Guidelines for Conscientious Communications. The first one is to accurately and respectfully talk about people's identities, situations, and roles in society. So this is an identity issue. Second guideline for conscientious communication is retire outdated and problematic phrases and metaphors. Number three is talk about policies and solutions in realistic and accurate ways that spur the action social justice advocates want. So this is taking language and translating it into action, but realistic and positive action. Number four in the guidelines for conscientious communications is lift up unity, participation, and cooperation over division, extreme individualism, and competition. Finally, number five, reinforce prosperity over scarcity. So that's a big one with the narrative, but let's dive into these a little bit. So that first one, going back, was accurately and respectfully talk about people's identities, situations, and roles in society. Within all discourse, there are terms that most accurately and respectfully acknowledge people's identities and positions within society. In general, consider using language that puts personhood first and emphasizes humanity. I know that Lanisha Duke on Rural Race Talks has talked about avoiding the use of labels. And so I think that this is kind of what that's getting at, is let's emphasize personhood and humanity. This can often be done by using terms as adjectives rather than nouns. So for example, black or white people versus blacks and whites, LGBTQ people versus gays and lesbians, young people versus youths, or by actively putting people first. For example, people with disabilities versus disabled people, people living in poverty versus poor people, people experiencing homelessness versus homeless people. Ex-con, criminal, and felon are terms that label people by past or present convictions posed against them, reducing their identity to the violations they've been accused of rather than their humanity. So instead, you could say people with felony convictions or people who have been incarcerated. Another example is minority. The word minority is originally a mathematical term, meaning the smaller part or number, a number, part, or amount forming less than half of the whole. As demographics shift in our nation, the accuracy of such a term is fleeting. However, it's most important to scrap the term because of its diminutive connotation. Try using people first terminology instead. People of color instead of minority. Guideline number two, and you are welcome to call with any comments, insights, rebuttals, 503-325-0010. I'm going to do a little bit more talking, but then we're going to open it back up to callers to continue this conversation about narratives and language. So we're going to try to retire outdated and problematic phrases and metaphors. There are some phrases and colloquialisms with discriminatory or offensive roots, which are sometimes little known. It's important to learn and then retire these terms when possible. So we're going to aim to avoid idioms or phrases that have obvious or even subtly demeaning connotations related to groups or cultural traditions. Here are a few examples. Turn a deaf ear, turning a blind eye, or the blind leading the blind. It's best to avoid idioms that cast a negative connotation on people's various physical abilities. Drop the idiom and instead use terms that cut to your point without offending others. So instead, you could say ignoring, or insensitive, or misguided. Another phrase or metaphor that needs to be retired when not used in its actual context is the term powwow. A powwow is an intertribal social gathering that includes dance, singing, and ceremonial elements. Many tribes and native organizations hold them on a regular basis. Using this term out of context to refer to a meeting or a quick chat or conversation trivializes the significance of these gatherings. So instead of using the term powwow, consider saying having a chat or a brief conversation or a quick talk or a brainstorm. Another example that targets indigenous peoples is the low man on the totem pole. Totem poles are monuments created by tribes of the Pacific Northwest to represent and commemorate ancestry, histories, people, or events. The term low man on the totem pole, when used as an idiom to describe a person of low rank, inaccurately trivializes the tradition and meaning of totem poles, which do not have a hierarchy of carvings based on physical location. So instead, you could say a person of lower rank or junior level. And the last one that we will use as an example is the term gypped. We're going to retire that one, okay? The term gypped is used colloquially to imply being ripped off or swindled. The dated term derives from gypsy and perpetuates negative and unfair stereotypes. Instead, it's safe to say you were ripped off, swindled, cheated, or conned. So that was guideline number two, retire outdated and problematic phrases and metaphors. The third guideline is to talk about policies and solutions in realistic and accurate ways that spur the action social justice advocates want. I think this one's particularly important right now. And again, I'm referencing opportunityagenda.org if you would like to explore this information further. It's imperative that social justice communications include a clear path toward a solution. Leaving this out, we've got a caller, but we're going to hang on just a sec. Let me get through this next example. It's imperative that social justice communications include a clear path toward a solution. Leaving this out can leave audiences hopeless with just another list of what's wrong in the world. In outlining these solutions, messengers should thoroughly examine the implications of word choices to avoid reinforcing values that are problematic to a social justice mindset, such as militarism or extreme individualism. Here's a couple examples. Reform gets used a lot with education, immigration, welfare, tax, recently police. As linguist Anat Shankar Osorio points out, we don't tend to try to reform things we like. In all of these cases, it's the policies that we want to reform, but by skipping that word, we are maligning public education, immigration, or taxes themselves. Instead, clearly identify what we want to reform, policies, rules, approaches, etc. And an example is, instead of reforming education, we are going to engage in education policy reform. And the next example is tough on crime or war on drugs. Research shows that militaristic language and punitive metaphors inspire fear and lead to unduly harsh policy responses. Instead, we can invest in healthy and safe communities, or we can have a healthy and safe approach to laws about drugs. I'll take a pause from reading, have a sip of my coffee, while we listen to the dial tone. Okay, back to it. Sorry that we missed you there. If you weren't calling to be on the air, call back after 10. If you'd like to be on the air, call back anytime. 503-325-0010. Guideline number four, we're almost through this. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for your attention. This is important. Lift up unity, participation, and cooperation over division, extreme individualism, and competition. It's important to choose language that emphasizes shared interests and discredits us versus them distinctions. By highlighting the cultural, economic, and historical connections we all share, communications can emphasize a community-focused mindset over staunchly individualistic thinking. Bad policies hurt us all, threatening values and disrupting communities. Good policies move us all forward. Instead of metaphors and phrases that encourage extreme individualism or competition, social justice advocates should consider phrases that reinforce interconnectedness and the value of cooperation. For example, leveling the playing field. Team-based metaphors suggest that someone always must win and someone else must lose. Instead, emphasize the common good, that we're stronger together. We should share the ladder of opportunity and not pull it up behind us. And finally, guideline number 5, reinforce prosperity over scarcity. Our country has an abundance of resources and should be a place where everyone has an equal opportunity. To reinforce that idea, we should avoid discussing options and policy approaches in zero-sum terms, which tap into the fear-based part of our brain that is concerned about scarcity and individual survival. Advocates can keep conversations productive by pointing to how policies and programs benefit society at large. Here are a few common scarcity pitfalls to be aware of. Using the terms divide up the pie or do more with less. Discussing resource allocation in competitive terms or saying certain folks need to do more with less pits groups against one another instead of providing a space to work collaboratively toward mutually beneficial outcomes. Instead, emphasize that we're a prosperous country that should include everyone in enjoying our national wealth. But our plentiful resources are disproportionately divided right now to the benefit of a select few. Can you think of any natural resources that are being harvested for corporate profit rather than the profit of the people who live in the area where those resources exist? Next example, making tough choices or rein in spending. Rein with an E-I. Using economic arguments as the basis for social change belies the moral reasons to adjust systems and policies to be in line with our values. For example, the ills of mass incarceration and flawed drug policy need to be addressed not only because current approaches are too costly, but also because they inflict harm on families, communities, and society. Instead, speak to common sense reasons for changing misguided policies that don't fit with our society's values. Where does our society get its values from these days? I'm almost done. 503-325-0010. Going to hand it back to you to share your thoughts on this topic. So final example on welfare, food stamps, and Section 8. Talking about people being on welfare or on food stamps reinforces the scarcity-based view that those individuals are on the dole, getting something for nothing. But these shared programs exist to benefit society overall. We don't talk about people being on the U.S. Postal Service or being eligible to use the interstate highway system. Context helps illustrate how a program is fulfilling its purpose and reinforces how that support will be there for others when they face hard times. So instead, describe programs in context. A young person who uses TANF as bridge while between jobs, a family that used Section 8 to find a home closer to work and school. So that's it. Those are opportunityagenda.org's 5 guidelines for conscientious communications. To review, we talked about accurately and respectfully talking about people's identities, situations, and roles in societies, emphasizing personhood and humanity first and foremost. We talked about retiring outdated and problematic phrases and metaphors. We should always be on the lookout for what these are. I know it's challenging to keep up with the language. Things are changing fast right now, but it's a worthy effort. Guideline number 3 was to talk about policies and solutions in realistic and accurate ways that spur the action social justice advocates want. Guideline 4, lift up unity, participation, and cooperation over division, extreme individualism, and competition. And finally, reinforce prosperity over scarcity. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Conversation on KMUN. My name is Graham, and the number to call to join the conversation is 503-325-0010. We've got three open phone lines, and I would like to hear your thoughts on some of these concepts about conscientious communication. Did any of those ring a bell for you? Do any of them present a challenge for you? Have you noticed any of them in action, or have you noticed any ways where we need more action? The thought that spurred this conversation for me today was the idea that we either create the narrative or the narrative creates us. And at what point do we become passive receptors of a narrative? And at what point do we become the genesis of the narrative that we prefer? Looks like I've got Paul on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Graham. I find your show so fascinating. But I have been trying to deal with a word, and I think my understanding of it could be wrong. It's laissez-faire. And I, in the past, believed that to mean something like, well, I don't care. Or we're not interested. But in doing a tiny bit of research, I found that it may refer to something more in, like, in French industry, banking, transactions, that type of thing. I wonder if any of your listeners really know or can shed some light on the true meaning of laissez-faire.
Well, I think you're right. I think it probably gets used in multiple ways. It seems like in reference to, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it, laissez-faire, is that what you said?
I think it's spelled L-A-I-S-E-Z.
Yeah.
Dash F. A-I with one of those exclamations at the top, R-E.
So laissez-faire capitalism is the abstention by governments from interfering in the workings of the free market, and a more general definition that I'm seeing is a policy or attitude of letting things take their own course without interfering.
There we go.
So that's kind of like how the experiment always responds to the fact that it's being observed. But and it also makes me think of one of my favorite aspects of Taoism, which is Wu Wei, where if you're in a river, then you let the current take you, rather than fighting the current or trying to change the flow or alter the flow. It's like going with the flow or going through the doors that open. But letting things take their own course without interfering seems to sort of be the general. Definition.
Yeah, that's what I guess it fits both of my concepts or understandings, but that really helps. Thank you so much.
So how does this, what was the context for you again?
Oh, I've been working, I think I told you, I've been working on something up here in Washington about veterinary prescription drugs, and I've been going to the State Board of Veterinary State Veterinary Board, and asking for a change in rules, and they have a very laissez-faire attitude about complete directions for use.
They're not going to interfere, huh?
Well, I don't understand. They have a rule that says complete directions for use, and the FDA and pharmacies and veterinary experts of all kinds, teaching institutions and so forth, have bolstered the idea of client information sheets. When you go to see a vet with a sick dog, you're pretty crazy. It's like taking a sick baby, sick child, and you're kind of pretty crazy. And so whatever is said at the moment, you might forget. But what these client information sheets do is give you a checklist of things to watch out for and things to do in case you notice that there's some possible adverse reaction going on. So that's where the word laissez-faire has come up in relationship to this effort I'm trying to make with the Washington State Board of Education. And this is an issue not only for Washington, but it seems to be a national issue as far as my research has shown. Oregon is in the same situation, and I think every other state in the union doesn't actually require complete directions for use in veterinary medicine, as I would see complete directions for use. If you go to a doctor, he gives you a prescription. You go to the pharmacist, the doctor will counsel you, boom, yes, but also the pharmacist will counsel you and give you written information. With animal drugs, that may never happen. They just say, give twice a day until unconscious.
Wow.
I apologize for that.
Well, it sounds like you're facing some institutional inertia as well.
Oh, you bet.
It's hard to turn that big ship.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been working at this for 7 years now. But anyhow, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your shows, and I really appreciate this particular show for, you know, helping me understand language better.
It's an interesting thing. You know, it's something that if you choose to not pay any attention to it, you can go your whole life. But then when you start digging in, there's a lot of stuff that's it's very close to the surface, but it's invisible at the same time.
Well, I find KMUM a real education that I would not have gotten otherwise. There's certain shows that come on, McClusker, I call him Michael McBummer. I love him. Margarita and many others. The Ship Report. Gosh, there's so many great shows. And really, I'm getting an education I missed somehow. But thank you.
Well, absolutely, Paul. Thank you for your support.
All right. Take care.
You too, and good luck with the work you're doing.
I call it the doggy lobby.
The doggy lobby. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. 503-325-0010. We discussed 5 guidelines for conscientious communication. A couple that really stood out for me were talking about policies and solutions in realistic and accurate ways that spur the action social justice advocates want. And then the other one being lift up unity, participation, and cooperation over division, extreme individualism, and competition. I think that those two stand out to me because when we talk about the narrative that if we allow ourselves to passively let the narrative create us, it doesn't seem like these are being achieved, but it seems like they're, like I mentioned before, just under the surface. Maybe they're ready for their time. I would be curious to hear from someone who has worked in schools and education about this concept of division, extreme individualism, and competition. The example saying that team-based metaphors suggest that someone must always win and someone else must lose. I played high school sports. I played sports as a kid. And it was really fun when it was a game. But as soon as it became a competition, I quit. Is there too much competition in the way that we educate young folks? Is there too much of an emphasis on individualism? Hopefully cooperation is something that is reinforced in schools. But it does seem to me that a lot of the lessons are in that someone has to win and someone has to lose paradigm. What are your thoughts on that? And then the one that I mentioned before, policies and solutions that spur the action social justice advocates want. If you had a magic wand, and you could spur the action that social justice advocates want, what would be the first thing that you would do? The first change, the first action? There's a lot of social justice advocates in the street these days. More power to them. But if all they get to do is create a list of what's wrong with the world, then we're not doing our part to talk about policies and solutions in realistic and accurate ways that spur the action social justice advocates want. We've got a caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Good morning.
I have a master's in education from UC Berkeley, and I taught in the schools. And to answer your question, I think that children need to be given agency in classrooms. And when they have that and they're taught how to be students, how to cooperate, how to live in a classroom together like it's a city, and they have a voice in what they learn and how they're learning, it makes a really big difference. One thing that happens in our education system is that there's no unifying, for a better word, I would say theology. And not to be religious, but there's not a unifying spirit. And the reason I know the difference is because I was educated in Catholic schools all the way through college. And I'm not advocating this at all because I'm an atheist now, but reading the Bible from cover to cover every year, even as a young child, all the way through the end of my studies at USF, unified my thought and also taught me that people were thinking things different than me and that I needed to include those thoughts in the way I thought about the world. And when you run your classroom in teams and make sure that students are heard and their concerns are voiced, you're going a long way towards having them understand that competing can be good for you. It doesn't have to be a war, you know. And I think that points to the solutions we need in society as a whole.
I think about what it takes to be a civil engineer or to be, you know, to serve on a city council or in local government. And all of it requires collaboration and cooperation and working towards a mutual goal. And so when I think about the sports issue, I'm going to show my cards here, but if you're in band or if you're in orchestra, you've got 100 people working towards the same goal of presenting a beautiful piece of music that lifts the soul of the audience. Not just because your parents are proud of you for air blowing on the bassoon, but because music is powerful and it is a unifying force and something that lifts the spirit. And so I just wonder, you know, we don't have to get rid of sports, but I think the more that we can emphasize collaborative efforts, it makes a lot of sense to me.
I don't think we should get rid of sports at all. My daughter is a competitive singer, and she works on a team, but also competition is a really important thing to be able to do gracefully, with poise, in a different way that we do that on a national level, in a different way than, like, football.
Yeah, my JV high school baseball coach didn't understand what you're talking about.
But when you're in a choir and you're competing, poise is really important. They get points for poise and decorum.
That's and a very good
her
point.
Her team was impeccable, but they whooped tail. I mean, they would travel up and down the state and just beat everybody. And part of their deal was to be respectful and poised. That is an important thing to learn, and that's what I taught in my classrooms. My students still run up to me if they see me and talk to me about the goals they planned based on being in first, second, and third grade, fifth graders. You know, it's it's important. And our education system does not convey what the United States is actually about.
So I want to go back to your comment about a unifying theology. Where do we get our values from?
Our values are from the Native American community. All we have to do is look at the forefathers, the real forefathers of this country. When you're talking about Native American, you're talking about, I'm a third Native American, and a lot of people, the Native Americans aren't gone, we're here.
Yeah.
Mexican people, those are Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at what is, it's already here. You know, look at Oklahoma. What's happened in Oklahoma is fantastic. Those are the values that are in the Constitution itself. The Constitution needs to be ratified and rewritten to fit in our world the way it is right now. And there are some really good values there that need to be emphasized in our everyday lives. We are, for the most part, a good and generous people. Capitalism doesn't work. We're seeing that capitalism doesn't work. We're feeling it. We're dying.
Late stage empire, as they say?
You know, it never was going to work because it doesn't work for all the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really like your concept of looking to our values, looking to the indigenous peoples as a source for our values. I think that's brilliant.
Well, it's not even the indigenous people. It's who we are. We're still here.
Mm-hmm.
We're here. And thank you for, I wanted to really call you to address what you were talking about before, because I was just talking about that with a friend last night. And, you know, there's a lot to keep up with around identity and around just knowing who people are and being respectful. And those politics are really important to embody, and it's fun. And I'm from San Francisco, so, you know, I'm already there. but I'm really giving you a shout-out for doing that. That was brave and really important.
Well,
I wanted to call and support you.
Very kind. I appreciate that so much, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I'll do it for the rest of my life. Don't worry.
Cheers.
Yeah, to you too.
Call back anytime.
I will.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was awfully nice. Thank you to everyone who supports this show and this station. It's kind of a thrill to work for an organization that does have somewhat of a leadership role in these topics. And I think we should give a really big shout out to Lanisha Duke for stepping up to the mic and taking ownership of the work. It's not easy. It's not an easy place to be. But she is emphasizing humanity. She's emphasizing relying less on labels. And I particularly like her efforts to encourage people to use I statements rather than you or they or people. Always speak from your own experience, because that's where your qualifications are. Don't speak for others, and don't put words or thoughts or ideas in other people's mouths or heads. So I think we do have a little bit of a responsibility here at the radio station to engage in conversations like these. We've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I think we can create our own narrative if we shut up our chattery brain and connect to our spiritual inner self. We can create the narrative that way instead of having the narrative create us.
And so what kind of a narrative would that spiritual self create?
If you would just listen, I believe we're all spiritual beings. I don't believe in religion because I think religion is man-made as a way of controlling other people. But I believe that everyone on this whole planet, including the animals, everything, we're all interconnected and we're all spiritual. But we've lost that touch with ourselves. But if you shut your brain down and connect with your inner self, I think you will find that you have the ability to create the narrative and how to treat other people, because we're all interconnected. You know your program, Bioneers?
Yes.
You know the leading lines on it?
Revolution from the heart of nature.
Yes, we're all connected, and we are, but we've lost sight of that. And we've put other things in priority, like earning money and telling other people what to do. And, I mean, we've just totally lost our narrative. We need to all just get connected with ourselves. I think we could change a lot.
Yeah, and the violence that's done to nature is done to ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. Every time we spray herbicides and pesticides, and then we go, where's the birds? Well, it's like you're poisoning their food. Where do you think they are? They're gone.
And stripping resources, too. You know,
Would you mine your own body? We cut down the logs, and we ship them off to other countries. We've allowed the hedge funds to come and take over our forest. You know, every time I hear about them, you know, you go walk in a national forest, and there's warnings about posted. We're going to be spraying at this time. Why? Why do we keep poisoning our planet, and we've known for over 50 years what we're doing, and we're not changing it because of everybody is greedy and wants money and could care less about other things. But we need to change the narrative and interact with ourselves, and that gives us the ability to interact with all other spiritual beings.
Well, I'm going to take a cue from your bravery, and I'm going to mirror what you said and say that I, too, personally believe that spirit is the fundamental reality and that spirit creates matter.
Yes.
And that we are all spiritual beings. So I share that belief with you.
Good. There's some, you know, Deepak Chopra has a lot of good books that can help lead people to start thinking in a totally different way.
I'm a big fan of what Rudolf Steiner called spiritual science. And he also created the Waldorf education system, which is a good one. I thought about becoming a Waldorf teacher. And I will also say that Rudolf Steiner was playing nuts in some ways, but he was also fantastically brilliant 95% of the time. Cool. Well, any other thoughts for us today?
That's all for right now.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We've got another delightful caller. Welcome to the radio show. You're on the air.
Good morning, Graham.
Good morning to you.
I was just reflecting on my master's thesis I wrote about Heidegger, and I divided communication into four boxes: how we treat ourselves, how we treat others, and let's see, whether I treat you as a subject or an object. And it ends up with four different spaces. Coercion: if you don't do what I tell you, I'm taking away your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to jail for that, Buster. That's coercion. Propaganda: I am so cool. I'm the best thing that ever happened to this world. You got to believe me. The snake, you know, the snake oil salesman, the guy who's selling something. Then there's education. We know it's really good for you. And we're going to try and convince you that, you know, this is the way to do things. And then there's authentic dialogue. An authentic dialogue is when we speak to one another from our hearts and our souls and our spirits, and we treat each other as ourselves. I hope that that's all I have to say.
So the narrative that you would create would be fill in the blank.
We need to work on the authentic dialogue.
Authentic dialogue.
You know, education is important, and we are treating each other, you know, as subjectively. We're treating each other as ourselves. We need to work from this authentic dialogue place, where we see each other as a stranger who we welcome, as someone with an opinion that we can investigate, we can look at, we can see as a precious pearl of self-reflection, something we are sharing like a gift. We greet each other as ourselves. As I think I'm just going in circles, and I just wanted to share that. I think I got in on the conversation late, and I heard the word communication, and I just reflected back on this thesis. So, four different ways to communicate, but step into the box of authentic dialogue, whatever that may mean. So, thank you.
Thank you. I just did a quick search for authentic dialogue, and it returned a whole lot of very interesting-looking results. So I hope that anyone listening might take that thread and run with it a bit. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Authentic dialogue. 503-325-0010 is the number to call if you have any thoughts to share about conscientious communication, how to create a narrative, how to avoid letting the narrative create you. Does anyone think they've been watching too much news lately, listening to too much news, paying too much attention to politics? Does anyone feel like it's interfering with their ability to create their own own narrative? I think that that's a big piece of it for me, is that silence is required for the creative process to start. And if the TV is always on, or if the radio is always on, then that quietness is unavailable. And so creativity can't germinate. No calls, so I guess nobody's listening to too much news. Everyone has enough quiet time in their life. Everyone's being creative. It's fantastic. The word spirit came up a few times today and was quickly followed up with a disclaimer that they were not referring to religion. Does anyone else have any thoughts about what spirituality means? Or where we can get a unified vision of values for our country? We just had two calls come in. First caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me turn my radio on. There. Just really grateful for the blessings of your show to transmit this conversation. It's so important. And I would just add that we need to to continue to watch our thoughts, especially our thoughts about ourselves. When we say, you know, I'm not good enough to do this, or I'm not beautiful, or I'm not this, whatever. Watch those thoughts and convert them around to, you know, I love you. And see if you can look into a mirror and say to that image there, I love you. And just keep saying it over and over again until you really believe that you do love yourself. And it's an opportunity for your higher self to come through and in a sense kind of show you that you are a beautiful transmission of light, you know, you might say spiritual light, that is uniquely you. And so good for you for having this program.
Well, thank you for listening.
Have a great day.
You too. And we've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, those guys are all right, and isn't it true that if capitalism would have compassion, then why would we have to worry about taking care of people when you make a donation to charity and then they send you tons and tons, they sell your name? You're like, why would all these people have multi-millions and billions, and they can't spare any of it? There's what that last guy was talking about. There's no compassion.
Well, we all paid more in taxes.
That's all I'm going to say about it. Thank you.
Yep. And I will, I'll shut my mouth too. That was a great couple of calls. Thank you so much. We're getting close to the end of the show here. Maybe I'll leave you with one final thought that really stood out for me, from the writings of Rudolf Steiner, and that was, and he was writing in, I believe it was like the late 1900 teens, early 20s. And he said that society has an illness and that the only cure for that illness is education. The only therapy for society's illness is education. And so if we're going to think about policies and solutions that spur the action social justice advocates want, then I really hope that values and teaching students how to be students, I think we should start with the young folks, I guess is what I'm saying. It's been a nice conversation today. I appreciate everyone that called in. I think that there was, I don't know, the word that comes to mind, I think, is just bravery. I think we have to be brave right now. And we have to trust. And as one of our callers said, we need to love ourselves. It's hard for us to love each other if we don't first love ourselves. So I encourage you to take that gentleman's incredibly sound advice and look into the mirror every day and say that I love you. Or even say that you are love. I am love. And I am light. I look forward to joining you next week, the day before the holiday. Maybe we'll do an episode about the so-called Thanksgiving ritual in America and what it means. What are our values around that particular holiday? What was the narrative that was given to us? And what kind of a narrative would we like to create? I think a lot of traditional holidays are coming under the magnifying glass. Columbus Day stands out.